Can you name the six deep hip external rotator muscles? It's kind of analogous to the rotator cuff in the shoulder. There's a lot of overlap, but also it has a different role and function in the hip. And I would guess, even for seasoned clinicians and professionals, it's not something that we can just say off the top of our head. There's something about these hip external rotators that makes it very hard to visualize, to fully understand what they're doing, to understand their role. It's very different from the rotator cuff in the shoulder. Most of us know the four rotator cuff muscles and can visualize them in the shoulder. Yet, it's very confusing and very mysterious in the hip. So that's what I want to talk about today. Listen into this episode. Let's talk about the structure, the function, the role, and how to train for better hip stability, keeping all of this in mind with the deep six external rotators of the hip. Welcome to the HNL Movement Podcast, where everything is geared to leveling up your performance in activities, sports, and life. Join me in my professional journey as I share my knowledge and experiences while also learning from professionals, colleagues, clients, and you with one goal in mind: how to optimize human performance. This is the right place to learn how a multidimensional approach will sustain the performance and lifestyle you desire. Welcome back, everyone, to the HNL Movement Podcast. For all of my new listeners out there, you're in the right place to hear about all these topics, strategies, conversations, and tips, all dealing with optimizing human performance. And for all of my returning listeners, thank you again for tuning in for another episode. And for everyone out there, if you haven't heard the past episodes, go check them out on all of your favorite podcasting platforms. There's been a lot of great solo topics, a bite-sized chunk, one like today, that I'm covering some aspect dealing with injury prevention, rehabilitation, strength and conditioning, performance training, sports nutrition, or some other facet that helps us to perform better. And there's also been a lot of great guest interviews, guests who've come on, shared their stories, their journeys, something that we can learn from and apply to our journey to help us, again, elevate our performance and just reach our true potential. And all of these episodes, you can find them not only on my podcast, but also check out my YouTube channel. There's been a lot of great video highlight clips of these guest interviews, so you can check that out on my YouTube channel. Also on my social media channels, there's a lot more free content. Everything across the board can be found at HNL Movement, so go check that out. If you're finding value and benefit from any of this content, be sure to share it with family, friends, coaches, teammates, colleagues, anyone else that might find some value and benefit. And also, share it with me, interact with me on social media, and let me know how this has been helping you, and if you have any questions. I would love to answer some questions or see if I can make any other content that might help you along your journey. So with all of that, let's jump into today's episode, and it's going to be another short and sweet episode. As you've heard, I'm still working on finishing up. I really see the light at the end of the tunnel, so after this, I should have a lot more time to make more content, put more things on social media, on my YouTube channel, so stay tuned for that. But for today, let's talk about, this is something that I constantly have to revisit too, and I would say, being a clinician myself, yes, we understand this, we learn it, we know it, but it's not always something that is easily visualized or understood. What are these muscles collectively doing to help our hip function? And I think one of the things that I've heard in the past too is that the hip external rotators, they're stabilizing muscles analogous to the shoulder, which is somewhat true. I mean, they are providing that some of that stability, making sure that we have normal arthrokinematics, how the femoral head is interacting and transferring forces into our acetabulum or hip. So there's some truth to that. But at the same time, I think because the nature of the joints are very, very different, meaning that the shoulder has a lack of passive stability, right? The bony and ligamentous support of the shoulder is not very stable. Therefore, we have to make up for it with dynamic stability of the rotator cuff. That is opposite in the hip. The hip, the femoral head and the acetabulum, that is really stable for a ball and socket joint. The acetabulum is very deep and the femoral head sits right into it. It's really hard to lose that bony congruency. But again, we do have to have this fine-tuned arthrokinematic motion. We have to make sure that the deep external rotators of the hip are controlling that motion so that, you know, we don't put ourselves at risk for further injuries, like loading the acetabulum in an improper way or pushing up on the edges or the perimeter of the acetabulum where our labrum is, where you might have labral tears or other types of impingement type of issues. So it is very important that even though it's a relatively stable joint, that we do move that joint, especially the arthrokinematics of that joint, we move it in a fashion that's healthy to load our hips, load the hip joints. So that's what I want to talk about today, is kind of explaining what the deep external rotators actually do and where they sit and what they're like. And I might put up a YouTube video or put up some images of a 3D model so that we can actually visualize this. Because even in anatomy on a real body, the angles and everything, it's a little hard to conceptualize because the hip joint, again, it's a little different for some reason. I don't know. And I think a lot of students or professionals would agree. For some reason, it's a lot harder to comprehend and visualize than the shoulder joint. So let's first start by, what are the six deep hip external rotator muscles? So as their name states, it's all helping to externally rotate the hip. But I want to first make it explicit that in relation to our big hip muscles, hip flexor, all the three glute muscles, TFL, rectus femoris is crossing the hip too, and of course your adductors on the medial side. In relation to all of these big prime movers of the hip, the deep hip external rotators, they're so small compared to all of these big muscle mass of the prime movers. It's not as big of a difference in the shoulder. Meaning that your deltoid and your infraspinatus or teres minor, your teres minor and infraspinatus, it's a pretty bulky muscle relative to the prime movers like your deltoid muscle. So this balance is already thrown off a lot because we have the passive stability in the hip, right? With the bony connection. We don't need a lot of dynamic stability. So these muscles are relatively a lot smaller than you would think. So I think that's the first thing to visualize it. These muscles are not very big muscles. Yet they are trying to counteract or stabilize the hip joint so that all of your big muscles can generate a lot of power and force. So getting back to the hip muscles, so the six deep hip external rotators, you have your piriformis, you have your obturator internus and externus. They basically both externally rotate the femur, but one is sitting on the external surface of the obturator foramen, and one is sitting on the internal surface of the obturator foramen. And for those of you, it's hard to visualize the obturator foramen, but they're at this oblique angle compared to the frontal plane, and that is what's creating this attachment or the origin of the obturator internus and externus. Right above and below your obturator internus tendon, you have your gemellus superior and gemellus inferior. And then the most inferior muscle is your quadratus femoris. So that is the six deep hip external rotator muscles. Piriformis, obturator internus, obturator externus, gemellus inferior, gemellus superior, and quadratus femoris. And collectively, again, they don't make up a large bulk of muscle mass. Don't get me wrong, they are there, and they might be more developed in people that have done more single leg tasks or hip dominant tasks, but in relation again to the bigger picture of all of these muscles around the hip, they're relatively small. And also keep in mind that majority of them, they're sitting on the posterior side of your hip joint. And that's because, again, we have so much support, passive support on the front side with our iliofemoral ligament. It's super strong and stable. And the backside of our joint, it needs to be more lax and more give because when we flex our hip, if it was too tight, we wouldn't be able to flex our hip up, right? So that's where these muscles play a huge role into stabilizing the posterior side of our hip joint, but also probably that proprioceptive role as we get into different degrees of hip flexion or different ranges of motion, it's going to help to direct making sure that we're loading our hip or our acetabulum in a proper mechanically way so that we can transmit forces through our hip joint and up our body and whatever we're trying to do. So the next point that I want to make is, like I said, these are relatively smaller than you think, these muscles. And because of that, it makes sense. It doesn't have to provide as much dynamic stability as something like our shoulder joint. So it doesn't have to be as developed in proportion to the bigger prime movers. But then what is its real primary role? And I think there's some evidence out there, right? There's enough studies, but because they're so small, if muscles are not big force generators, then it has to provide other information or other purpose to contribute to normal motion. And what I would say is that it has a large proprioceptive role. And it would be interesting to, I don't know any studies out there, but even to understand the density of mechanoreceptors in these muscles or what type of muscle fibers are in these, I'm not too sure off the top of my head. But there is some evidence with studies looking at EMG, biomechanics, computer modeling, that shows that it has a large proprioceptive kind of role to make sure that you're loading your acetabulum in a normal fashion to prevent loading the perimeters, or they call it like edge loading on the outside of your acetabulum where your labrum is. You want to make sure that you are trying to direct load straight into the acetabulum in the ranges where you have healthy buildup of articular cartilage. It facilitates more normal joint kinematics. So all of this, we want to make sure that these muscles can basically sense what your hip joint is moving, work in conjunction with the bigger muscles to make sure that we are allowing that the hip joint roll and slide and glide in the acetabulum, and also coordinating all of that information so that we can actually create efficient and effective motor output with whatever the task is. And this proprioceptive input from these deep hip external rotator muscles, this is super crucial to make sure that we can do all of the tasks that we need to do, whether that's running, sprinting, squatting, jumping, all of these types of things. It takes a collaborative effort to make sure that everything around the hip joint is working together. So the bottom line is that the deep hip external rotators, they function more in a proprioceptive fashion, more so than actual strength and stability. So the next question is taking this concept and how do you apply this into training? How do you make your hip stability better? How do you work on those types of things? So I think there's a couple things that I want to just start this conversation with, is that proprioception, it's really tied into how much mobility. And when I say mobility, it's not just flexibility and stretching, but how much can you access your range of motion? And how well can you control that range of motion, both actively and passively, right? So stretching and flexibility is a part of mobility. I think when you have that, proprioception naturally gets more enhanced, or maybe not enhanced, but maybe it performs more optimally without having all of these restrictions or things that are impeding your proprioceptive sense. So that's the first thing. I think whenever you're stuck, especially in the rotation window, that greatly limits how much proprioception you have in your hip joint, but really limits the amount of sensory feedback and how accurate and how much sensory feedback these external rotation muscles of the hip can provide. So that's the first thing. I would say work on hip mobility. Hip mobility in a passive and active sense, and being able to feel and tell what position your hip is in, being able to activate certain muscles at end ranges. I think that's all part of trying to support healthy hip, deep external rotator dynamics and proprioception. Then I would say the next thing is to focus on making sure that you have proper hip positioning when you do exercises in training, when you're doing sport-specific things, making sure that you can feel how you're controlling your hip. And these are basic things. Don't use your back when you should be using your hip. Don't get your hip in bad positions where it can't generate power from, right? And take into consideration everything that you need to do to improve this function. Because I think the more that you're aware of your hip positioning and how you're using your hips, that is just going to further emphasize and reinforce proper proprioceptive input from your deep hip external rotators. And I could go on and on with this, but basically the way to target this is, again, work on hip mobility, and work on hip positioning and build that stability and strength in good hip positions, because they work hand in hand again. And just keep this in mind, because we can strengthen our big muscles like our glutes and everything all day long, but if we don't have, just looking just with the eye test, if you don't have good hip position or good hip stability, and you're compensating with other types of movement mechanics or compensating using your back or whatever it is, that again is not going to create optimal hip function and hip stability. So it's just taking that step back again and making sure that we're doing things in the correct way. We're trying to focus on technique and form, and we're able to feel when we're using our hips in the ideal and optimal fashion and when we're not. And that goes with everything else with training. But that's what I wanted to reinforce this episode, is that understand, and for those of you that it's really hard to visualize, even clinicians, I would recommend looking at, I'll probably post up a video, but looking at a picture or a 3D model to see how these muscles are situated and oriented. And also look in relation, even if it's a model or a picture, look in relation to how big our prime movers are. Compare how small these external rotators are, which again, it has an important proprioceptive role, but not so much as a rotational kind of role. It's more to control the hip dynamics and hip motion. And that also makes sense too, because when our hip is in different positions, our prime movers, they are what's controlling our hip rotation. And our deep hip external rotators, they're just fine tuning that so that our femoral head and our acetabulum, again, can load our hip joint properly. So that is all that I have for this episode. And I think this is a good reminder or refresher for a lot of us, because hip dynamics, that's closely associated with knee pathologies, low back pain, all of these other type of pathologies, and even, you know, of course, problems in the hip. But remember this, 6 deep hip external rotator muscles. Try to look at how they're oriented, try to visualize this, and understand that they don't have as big of a dynamic stability role, meaning that they generate force to control our hip rotation and keep our hip joint in our socket. It's more of a proprioceptive role, where that is extremely crucial so that we can use all of our bigger muscles to create all the movements that we want to do and be explosive and powerful and all of that. So I hope this was helpful. If anyone else has hip problems, knee problems, back problems, this might be a good episode to pass on to them to understand that we need to work on hip mobility and hip stability and strength in a productive way to help our overall kinetic chain. And other than that, if you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me. You can reach out to me on social media. Everything can be found at H&L Movement. Be sure to check out my YouTube channel for all of those video highlight clips and other clips that are coming down the pipeline very soon. I'm almost to the end of the road with my PhD program, so I'll be sure to work on and put out a lot more content, and also things like this where it helps you to understand the body, the muscles, the mechanics a little better. Keep doing all the things that you're doing. Keep training hard. Work and focus on hip stability. That's a key component of our entire body where we generate a lot of force and power. And other than that, I release episodes every Tuesday. So I will be back here same time, same place next week. Until then, have a great rest of your week, everyone. Aloha.